Okay, the Public Safety and Violence Prevention Task Force meeting should come to order. I guess the clerk, we could call it a roll if we want. We don't need a quorum, but.
Ford?
Here.
Hurley?
Here.
Carol? DeLuca?
Here.
DeLuca's here.
Flowers. Gonzalez. Hernandez. Hershauer.
Here.
LaPointe. Ma. Mayfield. Moylan. Yednock.
Here.
Windhorst.
Present.
Boss.
Boss is here.
Chesney. Elick. McCombie.
Elick's here.
Stevens.
Here.
Ugasti.
Here.
Willauer.
Thank you.
Thank you. 10 members.
10 members. And I know I saw Chairwoman Mayfield on, and I see Representative Gonzalez now on as well. So this Public Safety and Violence Prevention Task Force meeting shall come to order. And what we've asked presenters, they were asked to give a 10-minute introductory presentation on their work, and then they will be available for questions from members. They were also asked to expect questions about how they are using their resources, the measurable impact it is having, and how the state can better assist programs and other relevant issues. Today, we have three presenters. We have Felix Family Service, we have St. Sabina Church, and we have Westside Health Authority. I'll just say for the record, and I know that Chair Hurley and other members and minority spokesperson Patrick Winhurst will have some openings as well, but Chair Hurley and I and Winhurst, we've been looking over the numbers constantly. And I'll just remind everyone, we made this statement before that in 2018, the state budget has spent $38,617,363.47 on violence prevention. I'm going to go to date. In 2019, it went up from $38,000 to $62,967,430.43. In 2020, it went up from $62,000 to $70,928,251. In 2021, it went up from $70,000 to $124 million. And then in 2022, it went to $132 million. So from 2018, we had $38 million spent, 2019, $62 million spent, 2020, $70 million spent, 2021, $124 million spent, and 2022, $132 million spent on violence prevention in the state of Illinois. And violence continued to rise. I'll turn it over now to Representative Fran, Chairwoman Hurley.
With all that money, we should have no violence. So just interested in hearing from the panels again today. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Winhurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate us getting together today. You know, we are in the last week of the session and scheduled to adjourn on Friday. And I know all members on my side are eager to hear what may come forward in the realm of criminal justice and public safety. I do want to thank you and Co-Chair Hurley for involving me in discussions and being responsive to our requests as it relates to this task force. You know, that's not always true on other things that are occurring in the General Assembly. So here in this public setting, I wanted to thank you and Co-Chair Hurley for allowing us to have a part in the discussions that go forward. Because as you've said, and Representative Hurley has said, these are very important and vital issues for our state, and we need to try to tackle them now. We can't continue to push things off. These are too important. So hopefully we see something come forward this week, if even it's not from our task force, at least the General Assembly, that will tackle these issues.
Thank you very much, Representative Winhurst. And I see that Representative McCombie is on, if she could be added to the roll. And members, if you have any opening remarks, please raise your hand at this time so that we can recognize you before we bring our first panel to the table. It appears that no
one. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, you're welcome. Seems like we have no one else seeking recognition at this time. So let's go to Felix Family Services. Who's here from the Felix Family Service?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Is this Director Simmons?
Yes, this is Sharon Simmons, and this is our Reconnection Hub Director, Pauline Sylvain. I was about to call Pauline Simmons.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. So you know what the charge is and the ask is for today. You, as a presenter, asked to give a 10-minute introduction presentation on your work, mm-hmm. and then be available for questions from members. You were also asked to expect questions about how you're using your resources, the measurable impact it's having, and how the state can better assist programs and other relevant issues. So please begin.
Okay, we've been involved on Justice Involved side for approximately about 4 years now, working in that space. We've seen some clear differences pre-COVID and post-COVID from working in the Justice Involved space. We have had funding in CYEP and some other funding sources to work with youth in this space. And we have definitely noticed some measurable impact from having the funding. We have served since we started in this space, we have served approximately probably close to 500 young people working in this space over different periods of space and time. And one thing I can say, we've connected our young people to training, we've connected our young people to employment, we've been able to connect them to counseling and mental health services and educational services as well. One thing I can say that first and foremost, our young people, there are young people out here that do want to make the change. A lot of our young people are stagnated by circumstances in their communities and their households that prevent them from being able to successfully transition from street involvement to a successful work or school path. And we've been able to work with a lot of those young people and connecting them to those resources. We start our services here at Phalanx with life skill training and job readiness training, which is a critical piece in just getting our young people to understand and open up to some of the simplest variables that a lot of us just don't think about when we're working with our young people. A lot of it could be as simple as definitions, teaching them definitions and understanding what they're working with and how to work with some simple definitions. We had some of our young people in the training that we were speaking to them about HR, and none of them knew what HR was, but we expect our young people to understand what human resources is when it comes to working in employment spaces. And just explaining that along for some of our young people made a huge difference in just them understanding what human resources was and the function of a human resource department as it relates to how you conduct yourself in the workplace and the resources that you can get, you know, from an HR department. So over time, we have transitioned a lot of our young people through our trainings, a lot of our young people into permanent, full and part-time employment, and a lot of our young people back into the educational system, just getting them back into school. Ms. Sylvain is going to give you guys a brief history of Phalanx, just to talk about our agency as a whole, and then we can get back into, you know, talking more about some of the young people that we've had in our programs.
You're doing great. You have 7 minutes.
Oh, no. That's good. Well, just a little bit of history about Phalanx Family Services. We are a nonprofit organization located in the West Pullman community on the far south side of Chicago. Been in existence for a little bit over 16 years, really focusing on workforce development solutions, as Ms. Simmons has said, not just for young folks, but for adults as well. So our participants can be between the ages of 14 and up, providing mentorship, enrichment activities to just keep them engaged. And then the life skills, job readiness, which the state has been supporting for quite some time now. So we're really grateful for those supports, and those supports has allowed us to just not just serve our 500 plus youth into our CYEP program, but overall, the number of youth that service throughout the agency, over 1,500 a year, between mentorship, training, employment services, or just access to support services, or just engaging them in community activity. Our civic engagement focus part of the organization really get our young folks, and not just our adults, really engage in providing back, being good citizens of the community. One of the things that this organization has done well is really become a space holder, a platform for other organizations that are building up in this community. One is being part of the Far South Chicago Coalition, which is a group of organizational members and residents that came together to create the quality of life plan for the Far South. Because of our capacity, because of our ability to do the work well, we were able to be their fiscal agent and really help guide them and lead them to creating the first ever quality of life plan for the Far South. It has been something that organizations has attempted to do over the past 50 years, but with our leadership, with our guidance and ability to just really provide community engagement, we were able to like lead that group into completing that project. Even in the midst of COVID, we are leading the HCZ, which is the Healthy Community Equity Zone projects, to just make sure community members have access to COVID relief information, vaccination, testing. Really want to make sure those resources that are available citywide, statewide, is rooted right here in the community. So this is just part of our engagement that we do outside of our workforce development work, which is primarily what has been supported from the state, is a lot of our work with our youth. In some of our work with our adult job training programs.
That's great. Well, let me ask you, since you've presented your case in 5 minutes, we could move to questions. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So did you hear the numbers that the General Assembly has spent on violence prevention over since 2018 to 2022? It's almost $500 million. Did you know that that's the type of money that's being spent on violence prevention? Just label violence prevention. That doesn't include other revenues that we budget for, like mental health and access to programs for people in schools. Are you surprised that we're spending that kind of money on violence, and violence continues to be on the rise?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I mean, working this work every day, we know the resources additional resources can always be needed. But I think from an organization that has done, you know, multiple evaluation of our services, of our work, and we hold ourselves grounded, we have award-winning programs. I think that is a shocker to know that that much is being spent because we probably get a fraction of that. And we are able to kind of still make do with little, but it's very stressful. But to know that that much is being spent and that much violence is still happening in the state of Illinois, yes, that is shocking.
Who are your partners, partnering agencies to help provide the support that your clients need when, as it relates to mental and behavioral health support? Do you have partner agencies that you do referrals to?
Yes. We have a few, and one of the things just we were looking at our notes just this morning that we talked about is just really the need. We saw the need a few years back to bring that in-house a little bit, because there's some in-house work that has to be done around mental health services before you can make, so you can make the proper referral, so you don't accumulate more trauma. So about 2 years ago,
with mental health?
Yeah.
Yeah, we partnered with Metropolitan Family Services for referrals to mental health for our young people. And what we found was though Metropolitan Family Services offers excellent mental health services, what we found in looking at our young people, that between the space of them being in our care and the referring them to Metropolitan Family Services, that we were losing them between the connection between us and them. It had nothing to do with the quality of the care. It had more to do with the transportation, with the handoff to someone else as they began with a trusted person at our agency, and then we had to hand them off to someone at a different agency. Some of our young people were just more comfortable with being in our space. So over time, we've been able to get a mental health professional here at Phalanx Family Services, so that our young people did not have to make that transition. And more importantly, so that we didn't lose anyone as a result of transitioning them to another space. So as Pauline stated, it is shocking to hear that number when, again, you know we do get a fraction of that number, but I think a lot of it has to do with being good stewards of the money that is put out here, just in terms of how we are connecting these young people and how intentional we are about providing services. Another thing that I think that we pride ourselves on is the fact that we do offer services to the whole family. We offer services to adults as well as young people. So when our young people and their families are in trouble, we can refer them for housing assistance and other things right here in our agency. So it makes it a little bit easier to provide services to the whole family, which is important. When you're only providing services to the child, they are leaving here sometimes being re-traumatized by what's going on at home. So when we can make those connections to the whole family, it certainly makes a difference in the outcomes of our young people.
Yeah. You know, the final question I have at this time is, if you could tell us some of your, or one or two of your moments that you could say, you know, you made a difference. Is there some story that you could tell us about that you know you made a difference in some child's and some family's life?
Yeah, there was one that just happened a few weeks ago. Client came in to see us about a little over a year ago, came in a homeless stages, mental health issues. Like we've seen, we've taken them outside of this environment. We've seen behavioral, but after working with us, being involved and re-engaging in school, receiving the support on a weekly basis from the mental health specialist, we had an opportunity to take him to Malcolm X to do a career exploration. And I must say the behavior, and this is just talking about the behavior, not even the ultimate other success that is coming along the way, but just the behavior from him just knowing how to act. And that came from a lot of the sessions, group circles, peace circles that we did. He was very helpful, seen him in a whole different light. I mean, dance the night away in this event. But none of this could have, no one could have told me that this was the boy that came into our program over a year ago. When I say trauma from just situation that had no fault of his home, you know, living on his own, living into abandoned buildings, we were able to find him housing, able to keep him in school and actually get him to a school that was closer to his home to kind of alleviate the tardiness and, you know, the disciplinary issues. It's just about knowing where those triggers were and working with that to kind of just heal that part. Everything else, the goodness in him came out right after, and he's excelling well. I think that is a great story. And none of that could have been done without housing support, mental health support, things that he was able to get right here in our building. Because one of the things is every time we tell him to go somewhere else, that's creating more trauma because they have to reintroduce themselves, retell their story about how that trauma is impacting them. And we try to eliminate that as much as possible so we can work on the healing piece. And I can say that we kind of really helped him heal, and he's doing better in school. We're looking forward to seeing him graduating in June and seeing the potential of all this to come from him.
Thank you. I know Chair Hurley is...
Thank you, Chair. I asked this question of everyone. You said you get a fraction of the money that we had talked about from the state. How much do you get for the state for your programs and the other programs that you help administer, including violence prevention funds?
Well, just in the CYEP space, we received approximately about $500,000 in the CYEP space. And that was to serve 125 young people. So when we talk about a fraction of the cost, in terms of just doing the math on cost per, with a young person with $500,000 and 125 young people, and the types of services that we provide in the space of counseling with mental health, in the space of housing, in the space of employment training, life skills training. I think that's what we're saying when we talk about, you know, a fraction of the cost. We do partner, you know, where we can with other the providers in the community. However, with the resources that they can get just through us, I think that's where we're speaking in terms of a fraction of the cost. And I'd like to think that we are good stewards of the money, you know, that we get, because we do provide that wraparound services, you know, to our young people. So that's primarily, yeah.
And I'm not saying you're not a good steward. Like I said, I ask everybody this question. So how much total funding do you get from the state for your programs?
Can you say that one more time? Something buzzed in the...
It's probably co-chair Ford. But how much total funding do you get from the state of Illinois for your...
Let me do the math real quick.
And that's just the youth side.
Right. And I can only speak to the youth
side. Yeah. So, I mean, from our youth side, I think it's a little, when we combine programs, probably a little bit over $1 million.
Right.
We do have an adult program, which is overseen by another department. We oversee our youth programming that receive also some SNAP programming and TANF programming. And some of that, we speak to our violence prevention on those programs as well. But on the youth side, we receive just a little over $1 million yearly to serve maybe
the number.
Yeah. And then I think that's nearly about over 200, between 200 and 250 youth.
Yeah.
Per year.
Per year.
Well, this year, because it fluctuated. Right. Exactly. It fluctuates. Grant cycles run every other year. So we do our best, like this last round of grants for the state. We submitted about 3 applications that can give us a little over $1 million. And so if we combine that with what we already have, then it will increase. But it looks different every time when there's a new grant cycle. But it's a little bit over a year, $1 million.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Co-Chair. I see Rep. Mayfield has her hand up next.
I just wanted to make sure I was on the roll. Please make sure I'm on the roll. Thank you.
I did. We made sure that you're on the roll.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. This is reactions, Laura Hannah. There we go. Okay. So.
Are you speaking in this committee? Okay. So let me ask you, that's like $4,000 per person. That's not a lot of money given the fact that the young people have years of trauma that you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. And so what is an ideal amount? How do you think the state should be allocating funds to really impact the lives of the young people that you encounter?
I think we could benefit from more funding, of course, and in the mental health space, particularly post. I mean, and we're not fully out of the pandemic, but we know that a lot more has come out of the pandemic as it relates to trauma and mental health. So I definitely think that's a space that can be improved upon. Even when sometimes we have to refer our people who need more, maybe more intense counseling, there are wait lists at other places sometimes that it takes time, and that kind of plays into the role of how we service the young people and how we're trying to break down some of those barriers to be successful. So that's definitely one space. And then when we get to more involved in training opportunities for our young people in terms of things like paid work experience and on-the-job training, as we're trying to transition a lot of our young people into employment once they've broken down some of those prior barriers with life skills and mental health, just trying to work with our employers and get them into those paid work experiences is another area that I think that we, could probably benefit from in terms of just transitioning them back into society. So those are two key areas for me. Pauline, I don't know if you have any others.
I think just the housing and mental health support, because a lot of that is continuing to impact their trauma. If they don't have a stable place to stay, which has been a lot of things that's happening now, if we can't get the support needed without the wait list, because when they come to us, they're already at the dramatic phase. Like, this is the end of the line phase mm-hmm. for them. And so if we have to ask them to wait more time to just see a specialist that can really help deal with the mental issue that's really impacting their ability to grow, then that's when we kind of lose them. So having more access to mental health services at that need and the housing piece, so they can be able to function as, citizens and become productive, will kind of help support the transition time it takes to get them from good to great, because they're good.
Yeah. I would say that it's important that most of the clients that you serve, they're probably Medicaid eligible. And when we talk about making sure that they have access to mental and behavior health support, hopefully you all are enrolling them and helping them get a medical home and having a family doctor so that they can get that help, and so that you don't have to have the full responsibility of making sure that they receive treatment. Let's go to Representative Yetnock for a recognition.
Thank you, Chair Ford. So I was looking at your website and kind of going over the notes that you guys gave to us. Would you say you spend more time as a job training facilitator, or are you really more of a referral service for like mental health needs? I'm trying to, when we talk about $500,000 for 125, maybe, youth during a year, does the 4,000 per person, I know that's just that doesn't say for each person, is that money used then to help them access mental health services, or, you know, could you explain to me a little bit how that money specifically, what you would do with that, or where is the majority of the funds that we provide are used?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, the mental health component of it is just one part of the services that we provide. It's not the primary part, because let's just say this, we just got into the mental health space ourselves a couple years ago. But we see the importance of it and the growing need of mental health. So that's not our primary focus. Our primary focus is to stabilize a young person into society via employment, education, or both. But in route to doing so, we have to work with them on the mental health piece and the life skill piece, because we know that if we do not, they will not be successful on the other side in terms of stabilizing their lives in the space of employment and education. So that is just one part of what we do. But increasingly, we're seeing that it is a very important part of what we do. So let me
interrupt here.
Sure.
So would you say that maybe a more important component, if we're going to use funds for violence prevention, are you under the belief that we should have a much more robust program in general for mental health services? You know, maybe we have to rethink how we're doing this and start with there. Or do you think that the money for violence prevention that would still be better served in job training programs? And like, do you guys do specific job training, or are you more of a referral service?
No, we do specific job training here. So that's coupled with work experience. So we do the actual job training in-house in terms of the ABCs of job readiness training. We do that in-house, but we refer out when it comes to that work experience. So we are partnered with several employers to provide that on-the-job training and work experience part of it. Okay. But back to your original question about the mental health component. The mental health component is vital. I just feel like you can't have one without the other. You can't just provide mental health, and then once they're done, they still have to live. So we're doing that en route to getting them stabilized in that employment and education piece. But I do think that mental health component is key. It is a key component in addressing the concerns and the real concerns, you know, of our young people in that space of mental health.
So are you supplying the mental health?
We do have a mental health component here.
Do you have counselors or social workers on site, or are you referring this to another program?
We have a mental health professional here at Phalanx on site.
And that's not funded by the state.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. But does that, some of that fourth, you know, the 500,000 that are appropriated for violence prevention, does that money used, I mean, how do I tie those two components together? Or is that money really used in another bucket of funds, or another bucket that you use that for?
So that's used for job placement and training. We receive other resources to support the mental health, because it's what we know that's needed. So that comes from another piece of supportive services that we get from other.
Okay. Resources. I don't want to hog the questioning time. Let me ask one more question. So would you guys have a success rate of, say, you know, 50 young women and men come to you for job training, and, you know, maybe, you know, 25 graduate to a full-time equivalent job or something of that nature? Do you guys have like a sort of success ratio?
Yeah, we do. And just to, yeah, look at the population that we talked about earlier with those 125, our success ratio is roughly in that about 70% ish range without having, you know, my reports in front of me, is roughly in that.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. I will cede the rest of my time. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for answering my questions.
So thank you, Representative Yetnak. So you guys, it's going to be our only presenter today. There's been some IT problems. I do have a final question. When a person comes into your door as a client, I mean, you can't expect to have them for a lifetime. What when you see a client, do you expect for them to, when they leave you, where should they be? And it depends on every client. But I mean, because you can't be responsible for their whole life, but
what's
the goal for every client?
So what we do, especially in our youth department, we allow the participant to self-select a goal. And what we do is really help navigate them. And the goals normally, they know what we do. So they come in for either an employment goal or an educational goal. We've been getting a lot of goals around housing, but it's like I told someone the other day, it's like we do, it's like KFC, they do chicken right. We do workforce development right, right? So they self-select one of those goals, and our role as an agency is to really help them create a path to meet that goal. So they have what we call an individualized employment or educational plan. And we work with them until they decide that they no longer want to work or until they reach that goal. And if they decide to have another goal, which is why we diversify our resources, because even though they're not qualified for this particular funding source or that particular programs, we have other programs that they can tap into. So we have people that have been here with us since they were 16 and they're 24 because they're not ready yet.
Do they continue to, do they get in trouble when they're under your watch, or do you keep them? I mean, it's not your fault if they still break, if they break the law or something, but do you, being in your program and under your care as a client, do you see the fact that they're less likely to be involved in criminal activity?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's our goal.
Yeah,
that's our goal.
It doesn't always happen, yeah. But absolutely. We do see declines and recidivism and young people, you know, returning to the justice system. It's not 100%. We always get some. And that's why the family support is important, because what we have noticed is when we do tap into the family, into a parent, that also helps in lessening their chances of returning back, you know, to the justice system. But again, it doesn't always work, but I think we've been very successful, you know, in making sure that our young people don't. And like Pauline said, our young people, they self-select their goals. So success is not always getting a job. They have different goals of importance to them when they come to our door. So we just want to help them with whatever they select. As important, it could be housing, it could be education, it could be employment, it could be just staying off the street, you know, for the next 2 weeks. So we will take those baby steps with them as they move forward towards success.
All right, one final member for recognition, and we could have a closing from Winhurst, and that's Representative DeLuca.
Thank you, Chairman Ford. I have a couple quick questions, but first, did you say that the next scheduled folks to testify, they're not going to be here today?
That's right.
Just for scheduling purposes, will they be returning another day?
Yes, they will return another day.
Thank you. And my questions, and first, thanks for being here. I appreciate your testimony. Just a couple questions in terms of your structure. How many buildings do you operate out of?
You said how many buildings?
Yes.
Our operations are in one building.
Okay, you have one building, and do you own the building? Do you rent the building? Do you rent a portion of the building? How does that work for you?
So right now our operations are in one building. We do rent our space in this building, and we have several different areas of this building that services our young people and our adults.
Okay, so you have a setup where you pay rent for the building that you use.
Yes.
That would be correct. Okay, yes. And then in terms of employees, how many employees would you, full-time employees would you say you have?
Roughly, again, we have adult and youth programming. We have roughly about 50.
50?
Yes.
Full-time employees?
Yes.
Okay. Appreciate your answers. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Thank you, Representative DeLuca. We're going to close out with final remarks from Winhurst, Representative Winhurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to thank the presenters today and the information provided, and look forward to following up on your website, learning more about your program. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so very much for presenting, and this committee will adjourn.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.